This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Friday, October 7th edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. The first article is entitled, More Voices to Speak for Abused, Neglected Children. Decatur. A swearing-in ceremony this week for 9 new court-appointed special advocates reflects the new director's vision to serve more abused and neglected children than the volunteers have in the past. Among them were 2 new advocate supervisors, in addition to Steve Miller, who started work July 5th as the program's 4th leader over the past 12 years. Miller said the original plan was simply to replace Jennifer Garrett when she left after about a year as a special advocate supervisor, and then hire a 3rd supervisor in January. But the quality of 2 applicants persuaded the board to hire both Decatur women September 1st. They are Katie Boland, 30, who was a parole officer with the Decatur Police Department for the past 4.5 years, and Rainese Coleman, 37, who most recently worked as a family advocate for Decatur's Family Advocacy Center. Roland has a bachelor's degree in law enforcement / justice administration and in sociology from Western Illinois University, and Coleman has a bachelor's degree in human services from Millikan University. In addition, Miller hired Carol Metcalf, a special advocate since March, and previously a home interventionalist with Youth Advocate, in the new position of part-time administrative assistant. Wednesday's ceremony gives the Macon County Court-Appointed Advocate Program 69 active volunteers, up from 64 earlier this year. My goal is to retain volunteers longer and grow the program, Miller said. He said an increase to 3 advocate supervisors, counting veteran Camille Cochran, is necessary for that to happen. Also among volunteers completing training and sworn in by Associate Circuit Judge Thomas Little was Marlo Butler Jones, 45, of Decatur, and Assistant Warden for the Illinois Department of Corrections. The others include teachers Diane Orr, 46, and Justin Sundekamp, 30, both of Decatur. A first grade teacher at Murphy School, Orr said she has seen the need for special advocates firsthand during her 8 years with the Decatur Public School. Sundekamp, a substitute teacher who previously worked as a customer service supervisor for Kmart, said being a child advocate is something he's wanted to do for a long time. Also sworn in was Luz, L-U-Z, Catalan, 43, a stay-at-home mom from Forsyth, Lori Hubrich, 53, of Waynesville, who works as a paraprofessional in special education at Clinton High School, and Nira Nierber, 45, of Brighton, who is seeking a position as a Head Start teacher with schools to relocate soon to Mount Zion. Children need consistency, Nierber said. If I can be that one person in a child's life, I know I'll be doing something positive. The next article is entitled, Leaders See a Lot to Smile About in Decatur's Future. Decatur. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf provided area leaders with an uplifting view Thursday of the direction Decatur is headed. Moore Wolf said during the community leaders' breakfast that the things happening this week alone are prime examples of what the future of Decatur holds. "We've got a lot to smile about in Decatur," she said, during the evening at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. "We also have real challenges to address in Decatur, but I'm confident that we have a team in place able and willing to tackle those challenges." "The attitude of leaders in the community is unlike anything I've ever seen in the past," Moore Wolf said. Moore Wolf pointed out several things happening just this week as examples of the bright future she sees for Decatur, including lakefront development in Nelson Park and at Scoville Zoo, economic development with trade manufacturing opportunities, such as the $200 million investment in Fuyao Glass Group facility, and the WSOY Community Food Drive, which is being held Friday. Donations can be dropped off from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Kroger on U.S. 36 East or by calling 217-875-3350. "We're not done yet," Moore Wolf said. "It's the most incredible event of its kind in the country. We do that to help our neighbors in need. We are one amazing community." The city is working on or planning to spend about $200 million in infrastructure improvements, including road repairs and a sewer upgrade project, she said. Moore Wolf's speech led into comedian Mac Dryden's presentation about taking laughing to the top. Dryden has performed on stages from Las Vegas to Atlantic City on The Tonight Show with both Johnny Carson and Jay Leno, and on his syndicated TV show, Coffee Break with Mac and Jamie. Dryden, who was on the writing staff for Bill Maher's politically incorrect show, started by saying how happy he was to be in Decatur. "This is a dream come true," Dryden said. "It's great to be here to perform just off Highway 36. It's a terrific room." After talking about ways to be more effectively and efficiently meeting goals, Dryden discussed keeping his sense of humor during the most difficult of times. He spent time in a Moroccan prison and fought cancer. Yet Dryden said it helped to get through those situations by keeping others laughing and controlling fears and stress. "I knew the healing power of laughter," Dryden said. "It helps in making others feel better." Moore Wolf said there have been times since becoming mayor last year that are difficult. But keeping in mind all the things happening in weeks like this keeps her excited about what is happening in the community. "Some days I don't feel much like laughing," Moore Wolf said. "What a week we have had. We are winning big." She said city officials are looking for feedback from residents, with a Coffee with the Council meeting from 7 to 9 a.m. Friday, October 14th, in the McDonald's at Pershing Road and Water Street. The next article is entitled, Dennis Fall Festival Stirs Warm Feelings. Decatur. Dennis School's Fall Festivals are one of Principal Matt Andrews' fondest childhood memories. They were a tradition in the 1980s when he was a student at Dennis, but the school stopped having them until 4 years ago, when parent volunteer Beth Creighton, wife of middle school teacher Keith Creighton, decided to do them again, without knowing they'd been a tradition before. We even have an old-fashioned cakewalk, she said, indicating the area where kids were participating in that activity. And they used to have that, too. I had no idea. The Fall Festival is paired with the annual Scholastic Book Fair, Andrews said, which is a fundraiser for the school, as a way to get more people into the book fair, but it's also a chance for school families and the neighborhood to get together. We wanted to do something that wasn't necessarily academic in nature, but just for fun, Andrews said. One of the very popular activities is Pin the Mustache on Mr. Andrews, something like pinning the tail on the donkey. But this year, thanks to the pirate theme of the event, it was Pin the Eye Patch on Mr. Andrews. And the kids were lined up a dozen deep for a chance to place the eye patch on a smiling picture of their principal, most of them missing by giant margins. Another favorite was the pumpkin bowling, which MacArthur High School freshman Mateo Sanchez said was his class's idea back when he was in fourth grade. He volunteered at the festival to earn service hours, but also because he's still a Dennis student at heart. I've been here since kindergarten, he said. It's still where I feel most at home, even though I go to MacArthur now. I've only been here 2 months, and here I feel like I belong. In the cafeteria, Millikan University students were placing temporary tattoos and doing face painting, which drew fifth grader Tania Rogers. We couldn't come last year because I had to work, said her mother, Amber Palmer, watching with amusement as Tania received an intricate hearts and scrolls design on her cheek. This is a good way for people to get together. It takes a lot of work to coordinate all the volunteers and activities, Creighton said, but no one has ever stood her up. Volunteers included Millikan students, former Dennis students, parents, and Tabernacle Baptist Church members. The church has adopted the school and helps with several activities. The book fair was a busy place, too, with a packed house of parents and kids browsing the wares. Students earned tickets for use in the book fair and at the carnival games, and extra tickets were on sale at the festival. Andrews manned the grill, where he was cooking hot dogs. "This is my favorite thing," he said. And free popcorn was available inside the school. Tanner Hake was one of those Millikan student volunteers. He's not from Decatur, so volunteering at community events satisfies his service hours requirement, and helps him get to know the community, he said. He's majoring in musical theater. I work with a lot of kids in children's theater, he said. So this is right up my alley. The next article is entitled, ATV Driver Killed in Crash. Decatur. A 29-year-old man was killed after his all-terrain vehicle collided with a pickup truck Thursday night. The crash took place around 10:40 p.m. at the intersection of Hendrick Street and 22nd Place. Decatur Police Sergeant John Quell said in a news release. The ATV was traveling southbound on 22nd Place. It struck a 2005 Chevy Silverado pickup truck that was traveling eastbound on Hendrick Street. The ATV operator was ejected on impact. He was taken to a local hospital and later pronounced dead. The 25-year-old male driver and an occupant of the Chevy truck were not injured. Initial investigation revealed that alcohol appeared to be a factor for the ATV operator, Quell said. The Decatur Police Department Fatal Accident Investigation Team continues to investigate. The next article is entitled, Apollo Astronaut Borman Remembers the View. Milwaukee. Frank Borman hasn't forgotten the view. How could he? Borman and his fellow astronauts were the first human beings to gaze at the bright blue marble of Earth as they orbited the moon, snapping the unforgettable Earthrise photos. Looking back at the Earth was a profound experience. It looked so fragile from 240,000 miles, Borman, 88, recalled. You have a hard time understanding there could be so much conflict when it looks so fragile. Commander of Apollo 8, the first space flight to orbit the moon, Borman had allegedly flown in space on Gemini 7, had already flown. Both of his space flights were with James Lovell. On Gemini 7, the pair spent almost 14 days orbiting the Earth in 1965, a flight designed to test the limits of humans, since doctors didn't know if humans could survive that long in zero G. Though Borman and Lovell were stiff and their leg muscles had atrophied sitting in cramped conditions, they were back to normal in a few weeks, said Borman. He compared the conditions to the two of us in the front seat of a Volkswagen. I was fortunate Jim had a good sense of humor, and we never had a problem. People ask me, do you get claustrophobic? No, Borman said. Inside the spacecraft, everything was warm and comfortable, and outside, everything was cold. We were quite happy to be inside. Borman, Lovell, and William Anders blasted off on Apollo 8 for four days before Christmas, 1968. As the crew prepared for the historic flight, Borman got a call from NASA's public relations chief. He said, "You know, on the Christmas Eve broadcast, you'll have the biggest audience ever," said Borman. They weren't sure what to do on the broadcast, so they asked friends for ideas and finally got a suggestion that the three all thought was fitting. That's how Lovell and Borman ended up typing the first verses of the book of Genesis on the fire-resistant paper of their flight plans. And on Christmas Eve, in a live broadcast heard by millions of people on the pale blue dot they had left far behind, the crewmates took turns reciting the first 10 verses from the Bible. Andrews spoke first, then Lovell. Borman finished. "And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called the seas. And God saw that it was good. And the crew from Apollo 8, we were close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you and all of you on the good earth." "I can't speak for Bill and Jim," Borman said, "but I was looking out at a very desolate landscape, and I thought this must have been how it started at the beginning of Earth." Borman was raised in Arizona. After graduating from West Point, he joined the Air Force, becoming a fighter pilot and later a test pilot, taught thermodynamics at West Point, and became an instructor at the Air Force Aerospace Pilot School before being selected for NASA's second group of astronauts in 1962. His motivation? Beating the Soviets to the moon. The space program was essentially a battle in the Cold War. Vietnam, we lost. Korea, we tied. And the space business, we won, Borman said. Though Borman was offered a chance to command one of the missions that landed on the moon, he decided to retire from NASA instead. He has no regrets. I may have been different from others. My goal wasn't to be the first man or the 10th man to step on the moon. My goal was to beat the Russians, said Borman, who later joined Eastern Airlines and eventually became the company's CEO. Borman is a bit surprised NASA's missions to the moon ended abruptly, just 4 years after his Apollo flight. America's space mission is now concentrated on the International Space Station, which Borman called an engineering marvel, with plans to eventually go to Mars. Borman isn't sure whether that will happen. "My opinion is, we should have gone back to the moon and established a permanent base there, like we have in the Antarctic," he said. "I think NASA is pointed to Mars. But when people see the cost and problems associated with Mars, I'm not sure it's feasible." The next article is entitled, "Heritage Celebrates 60 Years Aiding Mental Health." Decatur. The entity that is Heritage Behavioral Health Center has been providing mental health services since opening its doors in the Old City Public Hospital in 1956. In that 60 years, Heritage has consistently grown, establishing new services and improving old ones, despite frequent funding obstacles. On Saturday, at the Scoville Banquet Facility, 3909 West Main Street, Heritage will celebrate its 60 years of service. and try to help relieve its current funding troubles with Chasing Away the Blues, A Night of Like Music by Michael Schur, A Formal Dinner, A Silent Auction, and A Celebration of Heritage's Accomplishments. We have three goals with this, Heritage board member and event co-chair Laura Cornell Kennedy said. We want to raise awareness and educate, and we want to honor some of the people who have helped us move forward in the last 60 years, and we want to raise some funds. Other than two name changes and a couple moves, not much has changed about its mission since Heritage was first founded as the Mental Health Clinic of Macon County in March of 1956. The first chairman of the Mental Health Association of Macon County, Dr. Lee O. Fretch, outlined the clinic's basic function in the January 9, 1956 Decatur Review. A diagnostic and treatment center for adults unable to pay for private care and needing a type of service only a clinic could provide, and for all adolescent children having mental disorders, to offer rehabilitation services for patients of Macon County convalescing from mental disorders which required being in the state hospital, to provide consultation services to schools, health and welfare departments, courts, and other agencies, and to educate the general public. The Mental Health Association of Macon County was formed on September 1, 1955, and within 2 months it had arranged space for a clinic at the City Public Hospital, better known as the City Contagion Hospital, located on the campus of Decatur Memorial Hospital, then Decatur and Macon County Hospital, at 400 West Hay Street. According to April 12, 1956 Decatur Herald, D.W. Lynn Smith reported to the Macon County Mental Health Clinic had seen its first patient, and two others had appointments. The number of patients quickly grew larger than the staff of two could handle, and the clinic even suspended service in July so the staff could take vacations. By January 1957, there was a long waiting list and budget problems. The state only released $10,000 of the $54,000 promised. It was the beginning of a theme that continues today. But money pitfalls have also never stopped the clinic from pushing for more services. A year after reporting budget deficits in 1965, the clinic expanded service to patients in surrounding counties thanks to a tax referendum passed in 1966. Fast forwarding to the present, recent cuts also meant more collaboration, also a theme in Heritage's history. Heritage has past and present relationships with DMH, HSHS, St. Mary's Hospital, and Crossing Healthcare. We don't have to own it. We just want to make sure it's our community, Cornell Kennedy said. We've been willing to partner with people to make sure our clients get the service. At Sunday's banquet, many who have been instrumental will be honored. And that's the end of part one of today's reading. I'll be back with part two after the break.